Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm Rory West, and on the podcast this week I'm joined, as always, by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello everyone.
So what we're going to do this week is, starting off, we're going to look through the three Scotland games that occurred over the past international break. And then following on from that, we're going to take a look into the desperate situation that is Heart of Midlothian. And following that, we're going to continue with the similar pattern that we did last week and look at a few games each from the lower leagues. But as I said there, we'll start with Scotland. What we're going to do, instead of looking through the three games individually, is just some positives and negatives from the break as a whole. Christy, I'll come to you first with some positives for the break. Fire away.
So I'll go with my first positive, and that is that it's clear that we have a formation going forward. So it's very much clear, I think, that Steve Clarke wants us to play a certain way. I was kind of thinking about this, like, is it a positive, is it a negative? Some people might think it's a negative, but I think it's a positive that we clearly identify with a way of playing with this 3-5-2. Went into this game with the Faroes thinking, are we going to change it? But I think the fact that he kept it with the 3-5-2 suggests that this is the way forward. We are going to be playing 3-5-2 in the Euros, and probably going further, going into the future as well. So I do think that is a positive, despite probably the first half against Israel, which was really disappointing. I'm sure we'll get onto that as a negative. But yeah, I think the fact that we now have a clear identity and a way of playing is definitely a positive. And even though, like I said, it's there about the negative of the game against the first half against Israel. On the flip side, a positive to that is that Steve Clarke identified that and changed it going into the second half. And, you know, we were much better in the second half. We offered much more going forward. So I do think that I'll go back again and say that, yeah, it's great we've got a clear formation, but it's also really good that even when that's not working, Steve Clarke isn't too stubborn to stick with it. He is fine to go and change and do something different to try and get an impact on the game and get a better result. And they're always on the table at half time or after 60, 70 minutes or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's so important with international football is that you figure out what you want them to do pretty early on, especially in a new reign. I suppose it's not too new a reign, but with Clarke, but he's identified this 3-5-2 for a good while now. But given the sort of limited time you get on the training pitch with these players, you don't want to be coming into every different camp putting across new ideas with a formation or whatever. So yeah, it's quite promising that he's stuck with his shape going forward. Has moved to you for a positive.
But I think one of the most obvious positives, and we kind of previewed this sort of idea, but Che Adams coming into the team, it just brings a whole different dimension up front. Somebody who's more capable of running into the channels, which is quite often a ball or a pass type that seems to be taken up by some of the defenders and midfielders that we have. So I like that dynamic with Adams either playing up front as the main striker or kind of playing in tandem with Dykes. I just think he adds so much. And yeah, what a positive it is as well for him to get off to a scoring start in terms of the overall international break. Good physically, good hold-up play, also pacey. Maybe not the most clinical striker in the world, but so much to offer for us, and we look so much more dangerous with him in the team.
I almost thought a positive was that he shut up all those folk that were saying, why are we picking him now when he turned us down when he was 20 or whatever. Like, I hated that argument from the start, and it's been proven pretty even more stupid than it was at the time. Yeah. So,
well, the thing there is, like, it's a question of whether you want to clutch your pearls and be very precious about the international side, or you actually want the side to be successful. There's no doubt that he's the best option we've got as a striker available to us, and it's an absolute no-brainer if we can get him to play for us to do so. If he wants to, then there's no reason not to pick him. And obviously, he's like you say, I mean, he's kind of stuffed that right back in all of their faces, so I'm chuffed for him.
Yeah, I'm agreed with you guys there. I think the other thing is, like you said, when he was 20, I mean, he was basically a bench player at Birmingham then. I mean, the player that we would have had then is, you know, he pales in comparison to the player that the Scotland have now. I think that we've got a much better player now than we would have back then. You can throw all the accusations of, you know, he's only done this to Euros at him. You know, he's only coming because of the Euros, but you know, at the end of the day, does it really matter? We've probably got the best striker that's available to us in the squad now. I think that that's much more important. And like you guys said, I think that he's definitely the best option we have, and we're more likely to win games with him in the team than we are with him, you know, with him not being in the team.
Aye, because I've seen folk going down the route of saying, oh, you don't want to turn international football into club football and stuff like that. It's like, right, okay, so you'd rather take someone, let's just say Lee Griffiths, who's barely getting a game with Celtic, and when he does, he just comes on as a sub and is making very little impact in the games. Take him along because he's Scottish, or would you take someone like Adams along, who's playing regularly in the Premier League, scoring goals for an all right team in Southampton, but it just doesn't make any sense to me why you wouldn't want to take him along. And to the point about when he was at Birmingham as well, if you put yourself in like his shoes, what if he went along to that squad and, I don't know, there was a guy that did really well in training for Birmingham, takes his spot on the bench, and then who knows, Che Adams' career could be nowhere, could be off the bench in Birmingham, out on loan to, I don't know, League One, League Two, and barely fulfills any potential. So, yeah, it's just a weird gripe. It's just kind of typical, yeah. Scotland, really.
And at the end of the day, no matter what his motivations are, it really doesn't matter. He wants to play for us now. Even if you grant somebody that he's only joined up for the Euros, okay, but he's got no option after that but to continue to play for Scotland or no one else. So he's signed up for the long term, regardless of his motivations. So I think we should just be happy about that, to be honest.
And that's another thing. Like,
let's remember that you know, it took Lyndon Dykes a decent bit of time as well to decide whether or not he was going to play for us or play for Australia. And to be fair to Che Adams, he's far from the first player that's maybe knocked back an initial call up to later come on board with the squad. I mean, you look at the team that he was going to go into originally, and it was kind of Alex McLeish's disaster of a team. Was it 2018 or 2019 was approached? I can't remember, but 18, okay, but that was likely for the friendlies against Costa Rica in Hungary, which did not go well, and then you'd have had that stupid trip to Peru and in Mexico and things like that. So I don't blame him at the time, but listen, he's on fully committed to playing for Scotland, and that's all that should matter.
Yeah, definitely. I was kind of thinking for a positive is just how, and I know you do have to take the opposition into account when it comes to San Marino a wee bit, but how talismanic John McGinn's becoming for us. I think that's 10 goals he's got now, and it's not all in the last 18 months or something like that, or there's a good chunk of the goals anyway that's came in the last...
First goal was against Russia in September 2019. So, yeah, about the last 18 months, all those goals have come in.
I don't think he was particularly great against Israel, but then again, who was that great against Israel? I didn't actually catch all that game, to be honest, so not want to comment too much. Yeah, I watched the first half and just kind of took my eye off of it, to be honest. And yeah, but I just think we've seen so many guys through the years that have played in the English Premier League or even doing well at Celtic. You can even just look at someone in the midfield with him in Callum McGregor, who performed pretty decent at club level, but just never really translate that to the international side. And it looks as though McGinn is doing that. It's not really something I would have even expected when we saw him at Hibs, and it's probably just, it's quite a silly thing to say, given that was 3-4 years ago. When did he leave Hibs? Was it 2018 he left?
Summer 2018.
Yeah. But I just wouldn't have really seen him as this type of player. But yeah, he's just so influential. Popping up with important goals as well. You just need to look at the goal against Austria. So yeah, enjoying seeing him in the national side. So that's definitely a positive for me.
Yeah, I think as well, it's just the kind of midfield player he is. Obviously, he's got the eye for a goal, and he's probably got that edge on everyone else in that sort of position of the pitch for Scotland, which means he's basically just a stalwart for us. He's always going to start. But I like the energy, the industry. Even him and McTominay have a similar kind of engine. I think McGinn's maybe a little bit more industrious than McTominay, but I like that. Always keen to win the ball back, even if they make a mistake. I think we've got a lot more balance in the midfield now, and McGinn is obviously vital to that.
Mm. Any more positives from you guys through the break?
I've got a few. I think that the Scotland's ability to bounce back is definitely a positive. I mean, again, you can look at it as a negative, the fact that we went down 3 times over the 3 games, but I'm going to decide to look at the positive and the fact that we've come back to get more positive results that were on the table initially. I think that starting these games and years gone by, I think Austria and Israel probably would have ended up in 1-0 defeats after the first goal goes in. The fact that, you know, that we've been able to turn them into, I don't want to say positive results, because I think one of those games we should really be winning, whether or not that's Israel or Austria. That's maybe more when we've gone to the negatives for that. But I think that our ability to come back in those games and to get positive results is more positive results than what were initially there. It's definitely positive. I'm kind of surprised that Harry's not mentioned this, and a major positive is probably his man himself, the Gooner himself, Kieran Tierney, who was excellent across the 3 games, coming up from that left centre half role. I don't know if I'm playing devil's advocate here, given sort of what I've read on Twitter. I actually think that, you know, Andy Robertson's got a lot of stick, but I actually think that because teams are basically putting a lot of pressure to stop Robertson as the wing back, it's actually allowing Tierney to get space to move into to be more of an attacking threat. So basically, we're all sacrificing Robertson to allow Tierney to get forward and to be that threat. And I mean, if you're gonna sacrifice what is on paper arguably your best player, then you may as well make it arguably your other best player to take his position. I mean, he was excellent across these 3 games in both that sort of left centre back role and even as a centre half in 3. And I mean, what is he, you got 3 assists against Faroes, you know, absolutely tremendous. The other positive, sorry, before maybe ask you guys to come in, was I thought Ryan Fraser in the 2 games, I think that he offers us a lot of different things to our other kind of forward line. I think he allows us to maybe get in behind a lot more with his pace. Really, really well taken goal against Israel, and he's shown a bit of his versatility with the ability to go and play wing back against the Faroes. So yeah, overall, I think I'm relatively positive about this this international break. Obviously, I'd much rather, and I'm sure we'd have all much rather, maybe seven points on the board, turning one of those Austria and Israel games into a win. But I mean, I'm feeling good, and I'm sure we all are. Just looking forward to the Euros.
Yeah, I think the thing about Tierney kind of goes without saying. He was absolutely magnificent. Certainly, I mean, obviously, you take into account, no disrespect, but it was the Faroe Islands, but still, yeah, to get three assists from that position. And take your point about Robertson, although I do think that at times it's a hindrance to have Tierney, at least from a starting position, as like your left centre-back, while Robertson is the left wing-back, especially in this shape where you're kind of hoping for your wing-backs to get forward and to provide an attacking threat, because I think Tierney is just a little bit more effective at carving out his own opportunities to deliver cutbacks and crosses in. But yeah, obviously just magnificent. And I would slightly disagree on Fraser, because though he scored against Israel, obviously I wasn't that impressed with him in that game, and I thought that certainly against the Faroe Islands as a wing back he was much more effective. But I am still a little bit frustrated with him in terms of what I think of with Ryan Fraser as a really direct winger. And for some reason now, it feels like he never takes on his fullback. I don't know if that's just too much of Steve Bruce.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Just.
I think for Fraser at the wing-back, I think that's perfect for playing, with all due respect, some of the lesser nations, is to get more attacking players on the pitch. To play someone like that wing back, and then you can bring in, bring in someone like Lyndon Dyke, so you can add Ryan Christie at the forward line and get a more offensive player into the kind of the central role, or somebody who's a bit more familiar with that, and then he'd been able to get Ryan Fraser and his delivery from the wing. So hopefully when we're playing there'll be a leg against the Faroes, and maybe home and away leg against Moldova, we can maybe see Ryan Fraser out there.
That is the issue with Fraser, is that I thought he looked a lot more confident playing for Scotland, and then it's probably largely down to the absolute dross that he's having to serve up under old Brucey at Newcastle. I had the Tierney sort of Robertson stuff as well as a positive. So I guess we'll move on to the negatives now. I thought, just to start with anyway, the Israel game, as I said, I didn't see all of it, and it's just almost that, was it four times since last September or so, is it, that we've played them? And that wasn't really the reason why I stopped watching. It was also partly because Line of Duty was coming on, I think. But it's just an issue that we still have no solution in breaking them down or finding out how to play against them. It's quite reminiscent of old. When did we last mention Derek McInnes? Must have been a few weeks ago. But anyway, he's getting a mention. Him against the Old Firm, in that he just played the exact same way every time and thought, right, okay, maybe one time it'll come off, and it never did. Well, sometimes, but you know, that's just a wee bit of a worry going forward. I'm not sure this is the sort of issue that we're gonna face or come up against in the Euros, given that we're probably going to be underdogs in all the games that we play. I was going to say all three games, but that's we're going to get through, so that's wrong. We're going to see off Croatia and Czech Republic and definitely England anyway.
I did a sport call quiz earlier. It turns out we've actually never lost to Croatia, so hopefully we'll keep that up.
Well, listen, Czech Republic lost to Wales. There's no reason we can't get a similar result to Wales.
And they don't even have a manager, do they? Giggsy's still in a bit of bother, isn't he?
Oh, Wales, I think it's pretty Czech Republic.
All right, no.
Obviously, obviously beat them twice in the when the Nations League, albeit against probably significantly weaker Czech teams than we will be facing come the summer.
Yeah, but yeah, just a wee bit of a worry going forward, because we're obviously going to come up against them in a few months' time. I think we play them in October. Yeah, it's October. So that's a game we're going to have to dread. But anyway, move on to Haz. Why don't you give us a negative?
Yeah, so I think one negative perhaps is, and I don't know if it's necessarily me jumping the gun here, but I'm starting to be a little bit scared about the goalkeeper situation with Scotland. I personally thought that Marshall was not very convincing, certainly for the Israel goal, and generally throughout that game. There does seem to be a bit of a, and obviously the thing is, it's hard to criticise someone like David Marshall when, you know, he is massively, in part at least, responsible for getting us to the Euros in the first place. So obviously there's kind of this goodwill feeling towards, you know, well, he should be our number one for the tournament. And then obviously Gordon comes in for the Faroe Islands, and but he played pretty well. He took a decent save off of Hendrickson, I think it was, for Faroe Islands. But he also had a couple of scary moments. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that's a bit of a concern. And obviously, you have to take into account that that Scotland's goalkeeping options are ageing, certainly. So maybe that's something to be a little bit concerned about.
I thought that as well. To be honest, I think the other thing with Marshall is Austria's first goal, not entirely convincing with that either. He sort of beats it back out right into the path of Kaladzic. He's been injured of late as well. So I don't know if he's also going to be in the squad for the Euros, but I don't know if that place is set in stone. It's probably Patino and Gordon. But I agree, I am a little bit worried about the fact that The three best Scottish goalkeepers, Marshall's the youngest of them at 36 years old. It's a little bit worrying that we don't really have a lot of depth in terms of age range younger than that. I mean, if you look at the third man in the squad, John McLaughlin, who's, I think he's 34. So it is worrying that we don't really have a top, you know, really top young younger goalkeeper. I think you're probably looking at maybe Liam Kelly at Motherwell, and even the sort of the game before, you know, before those come, the international break happens, he turns in an absolute stinker against Kilmarnock.
Who was that shite goalie that came in? Craig McGilvery or something like that from Portsmouth.
From Portsmouth. Yeah. No idea he's any good or not.
Yeah. Well.
Apparently he's very well liked at Portsmouth, but obviously it's quite difficult to judge.
Was Jordan Archer not well liked as well though? So
yeah, at Millwall. Yeah.
And where the hell is he now? He is at Middlesbrough.
He's a sub at Middlesbrough. He had a brief stint at Motherwell this season and wasn't very good.
The goalkeeping situation's a bit of a tricky one. Yeah, did I mention a few weeks ago try to get Alan McGregor out of retirement or something? I'm not sure
how well that would go down. but I always found his reasoning for retiring was quite pathetic, because it all came about because he got that ban for that incident with Lewis Ferguson at Pittodrie, and then he sort of spent the rest of, if it was a lot of Celtic game against St Johnstone or something, tweeting the SFA about every little thing that went wrong there.
That's as small time as it gets.
So such small time. But to be fair, if you offered me it without the baggage, with everything that's come before it, would I take Alan McGregor back? Yes, I would. Because on paper and probably on form, out of the goalkeepers we have available, he probably is the best one at the minute. But again, given all that's gone on, is it worth taking him? I probably don't think so.
Mm. Let's just hope we get somewhat of a penalty shootout then in the Euros, because we know Marshall will be...
David Marshall can be the hero again.
Yeah. Was it not like... Oh, I've definitely brought this up in a group chat before. I think it was Euro 2008, and there was a game between... I think it was the Czech Republic and Turkey, and they
was
were...
Was that not the game where it was like, it was so wet?
Yeah, it was absolutely pissing down. Was that Austria and Poland, or was that Ukraine and...
Yes, Austria and Switzerland.
Austria and Switzerland. And they were level on literally everything. Points, goal difference, goals scored, goals conceded, whatever. And there was the chance that the group game could have gone to pens or something like that, but it didn't in the end. But yeah, let's hope... Who do we actually finish against? Is it... it's Croatia, so who knows?
Croatia.
Yeah. Any other negatives from the break?
I had one. It's how deep we're defending. If you look at the three goals that we've conceded, I think it's all become from the fact that we're defending too deep and we're not putting pressure on the ball. The Israel goal comes from range. I mean, you look at guys like McTominay and McGregor. They're basically running past, the guys receive the ball to get back into position, to get into that sort of the deep defensive position, the low block. Instead of sort of going out to put pressure on the ball and not allowing them to shoot, don't get me wrong, I think that David Marshall should keep it out. He'll know sort of what's fully going on there. That's disappointing. But I would say we're defending way too deep and we're allowing too many shots from distance. And okay, you can take a gamble at that, but ultimately the three goals we technically conceded have come from it because Marshall hasn't dealt with the two, and the goal, the second goal for Austria has come in a position where we should probably have a left central midfielder at the time was McGregor, who just come on, should be out there. It's probably too narrow for Robertson to close, and it's too high for Tierney to close. So I'm a little bit worried about how deep we are defending and our basically our concession of a lot of long shots. If it's going to keep going the way it's going, where our goalkeepers are maybe making some errors to allow either the ball to go in directly from it or sort of second sort of rebound opportunities.
What do you say in a low block there? You might have Stan Collymore at your door.
I didn't get that at all.
Telling
right?
you off so about football terminology.
I'm kind of one. I somewhat agree with him because there's a lot of modern football jargon that I absolutely hate. Like I've generally heard. I think I heard somebody refer to running as lateral progression. Like it's just running. There's no need to change the word. Everybody knows what it means, so I can understand where he's coming from. But the list of terms that you know that you put out, I'm like, well, there's nothing wrong with any of them.
I'll tell you
that. Yeah, well, he took issue with the term double pivot. And it's like, well, if you've got an issue with that, it just seems like you don't understand the technical terms of football and you'd rather discuss football in cliched terminology like experience, passion, and all these buzzwords that don't mean anything.
This is going seriously off topic, but here we go. This is what he'd said. Double pivot, expected goals, generational talent, low block, transition, beat the press, recycle the ball, turnover. I mean, like, a good...
Generational talent's quite a bad thing.
Oh, that's rubbish. That's just a sort of English media sort of phrase. No one actually... I think I saw someone tweet, nobody's actually said those words, like... in a conversation before, well, until now, I guess we've coined that. And then, but then the best one was Jamie O'Hara saying "false nine," and he's a coach. Like,
oh boy!
I mean, Jesus Christ! Was he not a Billericay?
Explain other ways, but like the easiest way to explain it is saying that he is like a false nine. He's a false striker. He comes off the front line, drops in deep, likes the play, but. To say that you're basically discrediting that as a term is really weird.
Yeah. Any more negatives before we move on? Haz, do you have any more?
I would just say maybe, and this is maybe starting to get a bit nitpicky, but I wasn't overly impressed with Callum McGregor over the course of the three games. Obviously, he played in the latter two, and I just thought he was a little bit negative a lot of times in possession. Never seemed to go for the forward pass, and seemed to be. I don't really want to use this term because it's a bit harsh, but perhaps the passenger of the three that were in that midfield trio, if you like. So that's maybe something to look at. And yeah, I'm not sure that he's really bringing the same level to the table as everybody else who's been playing in those positions. I thought even Kenny McLean looked a lot more impactful when he came on into that position.
Yeah, I think Chris, you'll probably have some thoughts on McGregor.
Yeah. I don't like him as Scotland shirt. I also saw a stat. I don't know how true it is, but basically saying that no sort of midfield to forward player had played more games for Scotland and not scored a goal than Callum McGregor. I know maybe his game's not all about scoring goals, but he doesn't really do an awful lot. I mean, I'm struggling to work out what he does for Scotland. He plays a lot of really safe passes, and at the same time, some of them aren't particularly accurate. I do struggle to work out exactly what he does. I could understand that he was meant to be basically protecting the back four, but I don't think that's really meant to be his role. Again, like you say, Harry, I feel he's really disappointed, and that says, I mean, he was basically, I felt he was one of the faults for that second goal against Austria. It seems like his place is almost guaranteed, at least in the squad, if not the 11. But I mean, I don't mean to be that way, but I don't know. So if it was up to me, I don't think I would pick him for the Euros, because I just don't feel like he ever shows up. When he puts on the national shirt.
Yeah. I guess to finish off on a positive, that our next game will be in the Euros against Czech Republic. So that's something that we'll all look forward to. But now.
Well, we'll see. We'll be friendlies before that, surely.
A competitive game. You know what I meant?
Hopefully we get someone like Ireland to give a good scalping.
That's exactly
Germany
what you're after.
As well? Germany?
Yeah, they should take that.
I reckon they should maybe have to pre-qualify these days.
Oh, yes.
They're currently losing their group to Armenia, so clearly having a good time.
Yeah, good tweet, Gary.
I don't mean to put a damper on it, but I had one or two more negatives. I felt that I was very unconvinced by the return of Jack Hendry. I say he's a ball player, but he's not really a defender, and I don't actually think he's that great a ball player. And the final negative, and I think he's just he's a perennial negative when it comes to Scotland, and that is the infamous Oliver McBurney.
I thought we were going to get through this without talking about him, but fair play.
Let's
bury him.
He's rubbish. I mean, I think he basically got this sort of 20 minutes against the Faroe Islands as almost his last opportunity. I unfortunately was unable to watch the game, but I watched the sort of extended highlights of the sports scene. And I mean, I'm not one of these guys that sort of looks at like, oh, he's chasing everything down. But genuinely, like, McGinn was doing his tracking for him. He's doing his pressing for him. Nisbet was sort of going after people. And McBurney's just strolling about. I mean, at least look somewhat interested. I said, the Heat being one of them, but he just doesn't look interested, doesn't like he can be arsed. He's had a shit season, and he's just generally pretty rubbish. I mean, if you were to tell me, like, could anybody tell me what he's actually good at other than being a Rangers fan?
and having
a shit beard.
Looking angry?
Yeah, maybe. Not scoring goals?
Yeah.
He's pretty good at that, yeah.
Keeping the ball out the net, but not in his sense. Yeah.
He sucks.
Yeah, it's because he supports Rangers. That's why no one likes him.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. If Steve Clark, if you are listening, please please do not select him for the European Championships. If you're looking for a goal and you're bringing him on, you basically may as well just concede the game. Call up Warren Shankland instead of, fuck me, even call up Callum Patterson. He's more likely to score a goal.
And he's got a moustache.
I'd rather take a chance on a wild card pick like Lee Griffiths, who could just conjure up some magic from a set piece than have Ollie McBurney,
who
has played a lot of games, a lot more games than Lee Griffiths, but yeah, I've still yet to see what it is that he's offering. Stevie May, yeah.
Oh, now we're talking.
He's better.
And it's perfect. You can get him like paint the face paint with the ponytail and the promotional stuff, and it's Braveheart. Absolutely ideal. There you go. You get tons and tons of likes on social media for that. So, I mean, if you're going to bring Andy Constein along for the Yes or I Can Boogie song, you might as well bring along Stevie May for that sort of thing. Or hell, let's just bring Drew McIntyre along, see what he can do.
It's Andy Constein's birthday today, so happy birthday, Andy.
There we go. Anyway, right, we've been all waiting for Hearts. Jesus Christ, they absolutely stink. And it's, oh my god, right, so we'll start with the game against Queen of the South. I bought that for £18.50, by the way, just in case you didn't know. Was it worth every penny? Probably not. But did I enjoy it? Oh, hell yeah. It was great entertainment. Obviously not for Hearts supporters. It was probably hell on earth watching that, with the old sort of, you go 2-0 down after, what, 20-odd minutes, get yourself back in the game 2-2, thinking, right, here we go, the last sort of 20 minutes or so, let's get the winner, only for Andy Irvine to stick the ball in his own net. But we did react briefly to the Brora Rangers defeat, and I partly bought this game because I was thinking, right, okay, Hearts they're going to react in some form, and I was interested to see what that reaction was, and it was just pitiful. The start was so bad. Even putting the goals aside, it's not as though these were two off the cuff chances or whatever. Queen of the South were more than in the game in that period. The goal they got back through Popescu, that was from a set piece as well, so it took until the second, or the equaliser rather, for them actually carve Queen of the South somewhat open. And the issue with Hearts is that, especially going and looking at the first half, is I've just got absolutely no idea what Nielsen is trying to do, because I think he's setting up in somewhat of a 4-2-3-1, but Gary Mackay-Steven was just totally anonymous. I was reading that he was the only one that got pass marks from the Brora game. Okay, fine. I don't particularly care, because they got beat, so no one should really be looking for pass marks, whatever. But he's someone you should be looking at and thinking, right, he can cause defences in that division heaps of problems. And he was just anonymous. It must be so frustrating for a Hearts fan. And then they had McNeff outright, and they just didn't get the ball out to him. And then Andy Halliday's just trying to stroll about, try to play this sort of deep lying playmaker role, but he just drops in just a few yards in front of the centre backs, and then he'll play a ball out to either of the full backs, and it's almost like he's thinking, right, okay, job done. And it's like, right, and that you've barely progressed the ball here. And I just don't understand Boyce playing in the number 10 either. I don't think he particularly suits it. You're better off just playing a 4-4-2, if you ask me. And yeah, they looked a wee bit better once they brought Walker on, but that didn't really last too long, because he came on, I think, 10 minutes before the equaliser, and then within 10 minutes of that, the 3-2 down. So Yeah, obviously focusing a lot more on Hearts there, but Queen of South do deserve a lot of credit. They could have easily folded once Hearts got the equaliser, given the way that the game has sort of shifted, but they kind of battled on and picked up, I think on balance, a pretty deserved win for them. But yeah, now that that rubbish is out of the way, we can sort of focus on the mess at Hearts in general. Christy, I'll come to you first. What the hell is going on?
They're just not very good. That's the basis of it. They're an absolute disaster. I mean, I've just got the squad list up at the minute, and you look at that and think, listen, this is a club that basically kept saying we've got assuming we've got the fourth, fifth best team or best club in Scotland, and you're looking through that list and you're like, really? There's a lot of shit in there.
Oh, God.
Let's put it that way. I mean, I've got it up just now, and you're like, AD White, just not good enough job. Unfortunately, I'd say you've got good players in there like John Suit and Peter Haran, just not fit. Better, hopeless, obviously, away at the end of the season. Naismith, not fit enough. Halliday, hopeless. Mackay Stephen being a real disappointment. We've still got guys like Loic Demore on contract. He was rubbish last year, and he's on there for 2 or 3 years. They've still got Zlamal on contract. So, unfortunately, they've not quite cleared out a lot of the guff that basically got them relegated. I feel that Robbie Nielsen's a real negative manager. I think it's, again, it's telling the fact that no Dundee United fan was particularly bothered about seeing him going. It's difficult to say, because, I mean, basically, since Robbie Nielsen left the first time round, they've been a total mess. There's been no sort of recruitment policy. There's been no sort of set style of play other than shit, to be honest. How do Hearts play? Hearts play shit. That's pretty much it. There's no real recruitment policy in terms of, so they don't identify a player, don't identify a type of player, and they don't play a set way. They're just filled with guys who are either too old or too injury prone. Some good players, Suter and Haran, I think, are really good players, but there's no point in being a good player if you can't ever play, if you're never fit to play. They are just a disaster. They are ultimately going to go up this year because they're just better than everybody else. And nobody else in that league, I feel, is consistent enough to push in it. I mean, about the 13 points clear with 5 to go, nobody's consistent enough to get to call it back out. And I mean, if Hearts were to lose the next 5 games, it would be, quite frankly, a massive, massive embarrassment. Embarrassing than the last couple of results.
Would you put it past them, though?
I think they're just outside the realms of possibility of being that shit. I think they need to seriously look at next season and look at that squad and look at the management team and have a real consideration of their ways to go forward.
Their recruitment to me makes absolutely zero sense, and it's not really made sense for a good number of years now. You just need to look back to the summer. Right, okay, so you're bringing someone like Elliot Freer, and 6 months down the line, he's barely getting a sniff because Nielsen clearly doesn't think he's good enough. Right, okay, well, why the hell did you bring him in the first place? I think we could have all probably told you that Elliot Freer is a pretty average winger for top flight level. He's got a bit of pace, and that's probably about it. So why the hell did you bring him in the first place? You must have been really desperate for a winger, or clearly the famed Hearts Youth Academy is not producing any wide players. But Hazel, I'll let you come in on this. What's your take on the situation with Hearts?
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting situation. Obviously, it's not often you get a sign that... What was that?
situation.
Situation, yeah, as our old pal would say. Yeah, but to have a side that, as Christy says, will, well, I think anyway, as well, will end up winning this division, but you have the fan base so unhappy, and I think obviously with good reason. I mean, going out to Barora, as we've discussed already, that's really the root of a lot of the ill will, I think, that we've seen in the last week or so. I think that, I mean, if they had beaten Barora and gone through in the cup and then they end up having this same result to Queen of the South, would there still be the same kind of vitriolic anger towards the club? I'm not sure. I take your point, though, that obviously they've not played very good football. They aren't a particularly great side. I think a lot of people, the consensus seems to be that they're just the best of a bad bunch. I mean, I don't think, if you look at the playoff teams, Wraith being all right yet, Dundee, very hot and cold, to say the least, Inverness, same sort of thing. There's no team in there that is particularly great, and I think it's just a case that Hearts have better players. They don't particularly set up in a very, you know, interesting, innovative, or, you know, game-changing system. It's very basic stuff. And I think that from Robbie Nielsen's perspective, it's probably just a case of, well, I'm getting the job done in terms of getting this club back up. But for Hearts supporters, kind of understandably, with the size of the club, it's just not good enough. And I think, yeah, it's okay to look at it that way. You're getting them back into the Premiership, but what about after that? And I think the point you're raising about recruitment is basically it's going to set them back in terms of their long-term goals, where you're just signing guys that are available and you're not looking at what they actually offer to the team and how you're going to set up in games. So yeah, from that side of things, it's a big problem for Hearts going forward.
Yeah, I just don't understand how we're a few years on from Levine being the director of football anyway, when he was bringing guys just when he was in that role on such long-term contracts, and they're still in that situation where that you're going to hit this summer and there's going to be a number of guys where, even if it's just a year contract that they've got left, assuming some of these players have signed, say, a two-year contract in the summer of 2020, they're just going to have to bin them. And that's just money totally wasted down the drain, because you're going to have to rebuild your squad again. And how many times since we've kind of started the podcast anyway, or even further, looking further back, the Hearts are bringing in like 8, 9, 10, even more players per summer. And that's just never going to work. It's not a model that's sustainable, because these players are never going to gel in time. I think it worked somewhat in that start of the 18-19 season, when they were top in what, October, and were awarded the title by October, apparently. But it's, except that it's just it's rarely worked, and you just fast forward, say, 6 months, and they're paying off contracts of guys that it just really shouldn't have happened. I'm just kind of looking through the BBC match report from Saturday, and there's picket signs of Nielsen and Budge out. They use all caps except from the T in out, and it just looks really, really stupid. I mean, who's in charge of printing that? You just made an absolute farce of your protest. Like, if you're gonna do a protest, take it seriously.
Criticism of their protest techniques.
Yeah, but anyway, that's just a wee side thing. Yeah, it's just to your point about the Brora Cup defeat. No, I don't think there would be this anger, but I'm not sure a lot of, well, Scottish football's got over that defeat or realised how bad a defeat that was. That is truly awful. And I think, well, I don't know if you did, Had. I know, Chrissy, you watched the Dave Cormack sort of Q&A, whatever, with Aberdeen last night. And he mentioned that Hibs have a wage bill of 6.6 or so million per year. I'm pretty sure last time I checked, Hearts' wage bill in the season of 1920 was more than that. I can't see too many players that they've let go of since then that would have been taking a big wage or taking a big cut off that bill. They've probably added to it, if anything. So the fact that they've probably got the fourth biggest wage bill in Scotland and are performing at this level is just, it's one of the biggest underperformances you're ever going to find. It's just truly shite.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Can I remember about that? The thing is, you've got to remember that this is when they were previously, that season they were in the Championship, they had a very entertaining interest in young squad, full of energy. And you look at the age profile of the current squad, and it's so much higher. I mean, there's not really, this is with the exception of sort of Andy Irving.
Who's going to leave in the summer as well.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to leave in the summer. There's not really a sort of an important first team player who's a kind of young player coming through. I mean, you look at the last time you had, you know, a guy like Gene Walker, significantly younger, guys like Callum Patterson, who we were all sort of coming through, and there was different players coming in and out at that stage. And I mean, so this team's basically built on trying to kind of have experienced guys, but this is, a lot of them just aren't good enough. I can see why they've signed a couple of them, but this is, they've just not delivered.
Yeah, I think what Hearts should have done this summer, or this season anyway, was build a team, even if it was going to take a fair bit of cash and probably push them to the fourth biggest budget in Scotland. Let's build a team where they'll absolutely walk the league, and then they'll only need to add, say, four players or so this coming summer, where that'll give them a decent sort of standoff or standpoint, whatever. I can't remember the term. Lift off? Who cares? Anyway, of challenging fourth or fifth in the top flight. But they've not done that. They've made a mess of it. And they're going to come this summer with another massive turnover of players. Turnover again. Sorry, Stan. Even though that's not...
I think he'll give it in this context.
Who knows? But anyway...
He doesn't like it in the game context.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll move on before I get myself too wound up in this situation. I don't know why I get so angry over this. But anyway... Chrissy, you were in League One, was that right, this week? Was it Cove Airdrie you took, was that right?
Yes, I watched that. Sorry. I planned originally on, we were thinking about recording this on Tuesday, and I planned originally on speaking about Airdrie again, and their 4-2 defeat to Partick Thistle. Believe me, if we speak about somebody in the future weeks, I'm going to make sure it's not Airdrie, given this is sort of 2 weeks in a row, and this is a day between the three games. But in this one, I'll be honest, I thought they were hugely, hugely disappointing.
Before you go any further, they're actually away to beat Dumbarton tonight, so well done to them.
It's getting back on track, because I mean, they've been really, really disappointing. Today, since coming back, they lost three games in a row, and then obviously they're beating Dumbarton just now, which again coming up for Saturday. I'm just thinking about the potential embarrassment for Aberdeen if they get beat by Dumbarton team who've not played for months, and then they've played Saturday, Tuesday, Thursday, and then Saturday lunchtime.
Jim Duffy though. So,
he's quite terrible. I thought that the Airdrie were hugely, hugely disappointed in this game. I felt Cove largely dominated the game. It's one of the first times I've only seen Cove a couple of times this year, compared to last year, where I'd seen them sort of every other week in home games.
Jamesy's currently sitting fizzing listening to that.
Yeah, he'll be furious. Wasn't hugely impressed with Cove. They weren't efficient enough. It sort of took till the subs coming on for them to
to get their goals. But to be fair, they really should have been in front beforehand. Fraser Fyvie hit the bar with a free kick, and then just on the stroke of half time missed an absolute sitter, just totally scuffed his shot. And then sort of further on in the second half, Seb Ross, really, really nice turn, but he scuffed his shot, and sort of didn't trouble the keeper anywhere near as much as he should have. But this is those subs time of the game, getting McAllister on, getting Masson on. Obviously Masson gets both goals, coming in off that left hand side. I was kind of surprised the way that Cove managed their attacks down the right hand side. You know, both goals coming from the right hand side, given that currently Scott Ross, who's more of a, you know, much more of a centre half, much more centre back, managed to get forward. I'm quite surprised to see him right back at the moment. But that's going to mean that. Something we didn't actually touch on, we spoke about Hearts and Shea Logan could possibly end up there next year. But I mean, I thought that the goals that Cove scored were very much in line with how they play. They like to get the ball forward relatively quickly, get it in those wide areas, and then look to get it into the box for Meganson or a Masson coming off the left. So very much sort of archetypal from last season anyway, from goals for Cove, who definitely deserved the win. I was interested to see, because obviously last year I obviously watched a lot of them, and they played a kind of more of a rigid 4-2-3-1, but it seems here that they played a fairly fluid kind of 4-4-2 diamond. Quite often that the guys, you know, Connor Scully definitely sat at the base of that four and allowed a lot of fluidity between Fyvie, Seb Ross and Blair Yule. Ross more sort of on the left hand side, and Fyvie and Yule sharing duties kind of coming on the right hand side. And obviously Fyvie pops up for an assist for the second, coming on the right. So I really like that blend that Cole had in the middle. But like I say, back to Airdrie, really disappointing. It looked like they had one route of attack, and it was trying to go over Ross Graham, Dundee United Loney centre half. He struggled a little bit with those long balls in behind, but especially in the first half. But in the second half, dealt with them, and Airdrie didn't really offer a lot. Like I say, I expected a lot more from them since coming back, but you never know. I mean, this one against Dumbarton might get them back on the track here that they'd expect to be, obviously dropping at the sort of the playoff positions and where they probably aim to be. But I felt they were really disappointing, and I thought it was an important one for Cove after you know, going that two games without the Winston's coming back. But well, I'd say a good result at Partick Thistle, and then a little bit of controversy at East Fife. You know, they missed a penalty. It looks, just reading that, not actually been able to see it. It looks like East Fife were sort of denied a last minute winner, somewhat controversially at the weekend. So hopefully something that the Cove can build on, especially for them, and probably one of the biggest games in the club's history, going to Ibrox on Sunday night.
Yeah, so it leaves Cove 4 points behind Falkirk in second place. They've got Clyde away next Tuesday, same night as the Hall of Fame, or WWE Hall of Fame, so if anything.
I know what I'll be watching.
Right, hey,
Champions League's on Tuesday night, isn't it?
Bloody hell, what a choice. Champions League, Clyde v Cope. Well, you've got a full card of League One action that night anyway. Or seeing the NWO getting into the Hall of Fame. I think I know what I'm picking.
And the Bella Twins. You already know, brother.
Yeah. Imagine if NWO get inducted to the Wolfpack theme. That would just be... Oh, man.
Would be wonderful, although it just isn't going to happen because Hulk Hogan's involved.
Who the hell
is not a Wolfpack man.
Who the hell's going to induct them? Surely it's got to be Bischoff or someone.
Bischoff? Yeah, surely.
Got to be. Anyway, it has...
But I'd say that would be chef's kiss, Carl Carlson.
Has, we'll move on to League 2, where you've pitched up this week in Albion Rovers 1 and an Athletic 1. Talk us through that encounter.
Yeah, so I wanted to go for... Well, first of all, I kind of wanted to give some shine to teams who we're probably not going to cover an awful lot. I certainly think that Annan are kind of... sort of consigned to just a bit of a boring end to the season, just sort of swimming around in mid-table in League 2. Albion, on the other hand, obviously, I mean, you can probably argue, in the running for relegation. So we're maybe not going to cover them too much, but there's a couple of reasons why I went for this game on surface level. The goals are something to behold, but also then when I watched the highlights package that Albion Rovers posted on YouTube, it actually seemed to be quite an incident-packed game. First of all, it was something that's quite rare. Albion concede a pass back, indirect free kick in their own box, and obviously a rare occasion. And in don't make the best of it. It's a bit of a sklaff shot, comes back out, and I have no idea who it is that takes the shot, but it's cleared off of the line by Albion Rovers. And as you'd expect, Albion, unfortunately for them, not a great side, didn't have much of this game, managed to keep it relatively tight. A lot of set pieces in this game. It was pretty agricultural, as you'd maybe expect between these two sides, but Annan made a couple of substitutions, and it's actually one of the substitutes that sets up Ian Anderson for a great goal. Kyle Fleming, really good feet out on the left-hand side, gets clear of his man, and then sends up a decent cross to the back post, but Ian Anderson's finish is what it's all about, an absolute stunning overhead kick. Probably the goal of that card of fixtures from the weekend across all of the Scottish leagues, I'd maybe argue. Really well directed overhead kick as well. It looks like Annan are going to win the game. You probably expect that. They get a late red card, 89th minute, Jordan Lowton, and it took me ages to figure out what it was for, until I sifted back through Annan's Twitter. And turned out it was for time wasting. He got a second booking.
Silly.
Very cheap stuff. Yeah, and then Albion pick up a corner late on, and it's absolutely dreadful goalkeeping. Just trying to see who the goalkeeper is for Annan. It's Mitchell. What's his first name? Alex Mitchell. I'm gonna name and shame him because it's dreadful goalkeeping. Drops the ball in his own box. It's allowed to bounce, and Sam Jameson scores a goal that I myself would have been proud of back in my youth days. Ultimate goal here, and just prods it home. And I think the main thing that you can take away from this game is Albion are absolutely scrapping for their lives. They're probably not going to pick up many points between now and the end of the season, and this could be like gold dust to them, especially because they've got a side like Brechin below them who are in a similar situation when it comes to picking up points. I think that's a big step towards potential safety for the season.
What's so important for Albion is that they do have a game coming up. I think it's pretty late in the season where they play Brechin, and if they can, it's 10th of April, so next Saturday they play Brechin away. We're going to assume that neither of those teams are going to be picking up too many more points this season, so this draw that lifts them 3 points off of Brechin with a pretty superior goal difference, it does sort of give them a wee bit more leeway in that sense. So like if you just look at it and say they lost the game, and it would have could have given Brechin that opportunity, let's just say that neither two pick up any points between now and that game, Could have given Brecon the opportunity to leapfrog them. Highly doubt that. But anyway, yeah. I mean, fair play for taking this one and putting these two sides over, giving them a rub.
Yeah, that's what I'm all about. I'm all about elevating talent.
Yeah.
Strapped rocket to them.
Unlike me, who just went buried hearts. It's like,
yeah, buried your top guy.
Yeah, it's like, hearts have come walking into the championship. Oh no, what's this brick wall coming up ahead? It's like Triple H. It's like RVD or Booker T in the middle of their push. Oh no, here comes Triple H. Bang, push over. Fucking hell.
I mean, I think you said there, I mean, I don't know what the correct term would be. You know, when you say, like, every penny is a prisoner, I think every point's precious for teams like Albion and breaking in that fight to stay up. I suppose we maybe didn't need to touch on it, obviously, the Lowland League and the Highland League have sort of declared their leagues, and it's going to be Kelty Hearts and Vore in the playoffs. They kind of had to get this playoff for the season instead of null and voiding the league. I mean, the Iron League's only played three games, but it's probably right now that Brora got their shot at promotion. I think Kelty played 13. It's my fair these two teams get their shot at promotion. And I would kind of like to get one up to sort of rock the boat a little bit again. I think there was a lot of ambitious clubs and the outside of the pyramid that are looking to make their way up, so, you know, we'll see what comes of that.
Is the, like, Highland League, Lowland League playoff the most similar thing in football to the Money in the Bank, do you think? I suppose you, it's because neither the team that's finishing 10th in League 2 have no idea who to prepare for until pretty short notice, so...
Could be that, or it could just be a good old playoff, because then it's like they're kind of the mid-card guys, and, you know, one of them, maybe you could make a case for getting a proper push, but...
It's like what those dumb situations that obviously bloody Cena did, when he's like, oh, I'm going to cash in next week. Like, right, okay, well, that just totally ruins the whole idea of Money in the Bank, so... And did he not do that with Damien Sandow or something like that? Bloody hell.
Oh, yeah.
With his, like, brief...
I'd say the playoffs more. Is the playoffs not more winning the Rumble?
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's it. That's spot on.
Yeah, true.
Your shot at glory. No, well, Ali McCoy's forever.
Yeah.
Robert Duvall.
Should we do an episode where we talk about that in the future? Or just somewhere, maybe?
Yeah.
Great movie.
What a shot of glory. No way. Yeah. I don't ever want to watch that again. It's insane how McCoist actually puts in probably the best performance in that film.
And there's Robert Duvall, Brian Cox and Michael Keaton.
There's actual actors in there and McCoist puts in the best performance, so fair play to him. He's a man that can do anything.
Actually, is the guy that's shagging McCoy's ex-wife.
Jesus.
Well, if you never noticed, Alan McCoy generally punches Ian McCall in the face and gets sent off. It's quite funny.
I mean, there's probably quite a few people that would like to do that right now.
Probably Crystal fans, I don't
know. Yeah, all of them. Although they'd maybe rather throw halloumi baguette or something in his face or something like that, I don't know. Anyway, I think we'll finish up there. Next week we won't be talking about the football, we'll be doing our annual WrestleMania preview, WrestleMania 37 over two nights at Raymond James Stadium. Is that the ground?
The pilot ship at one end.
Oh, I can't wait for Kevin Owens to lob his dumbass off that. Well, not a dumbass. Kevin Owens is a great guy. So,
I did quickly retract that one.
Yeah. I just kind of remembered some of the things he did over the pandemic, and he seems like a pretty decent bloke. So,
I think he's a thoroughly nice guy.
Plus, that's going to be an absolute clinic. As long as they're allowed to have an actual match. So,
KSI and Logan Paul. So we'll get on to that next week.
Oh no! Oh no! I just remembered. Bloody hell! We're actually gonna have to, instead of watching the highlights, we're gonna have to watch SmackDown and Raw. Jesus, what a shit!
I think I'll stick to YouTube.
Christ almighty. I think, I can't remember, it was decent when Raw the past couple of weeks was at, before the clocks went back, it was at sort of, I think it was at 11 one week, and it was like decent enough time start, but God, yeah, some of those opening segments really suck. Anyway, yeah, we'll be back next week to look at the wrestling, not the football. So, yeah, as always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.